If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We have merch. Check out the AmericanGlutton.net shop. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, hats, and more. A number of people have come up to me wearing American Glutton merch, and nothing fills my heart with more pride than seeing somebody in one of these t-shirts. And I've been stopped on the street and asked where to get it when somebody sees me in an American Glutton hoodie. Well, you can get it all at the shop on AmericanGlutton.net. And my favorite t-shirt, Yesterday It Was Tomorrow, Right Now, is up now. Get it while supplies last.
Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment. Food as sport. Food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from. My guest today is Jake Muse. He is the owner and founder of Maui Nui Venison. You can find him on Instagram at Maui Nui Venison. Jake Muse, welcome to the American Glutton Podcast.
Oh, such a pleasure to be here, man. We appreciate it. And excited to share a few stories.
Yeah, dude, I'm excited to talk to you. I want to say first, I've been on like a health thing for a long time. I lost a lot of weight and I have been pretty dialed in for a number of years. And I'd also been hunting. And when the pandemic hit, I'd gone hunting and I always ate something that I caught, but mostly I have four daughters and they're squeamish. And I would kind of lie to them occasionally and say it was steak and serve them elk, which they always liked quite a bit. But when the pandemic hit, at first I was terrified. Like, I didn't know what the hell was going on. And we had a freezer full of quail, elk, and wild boar. And we had a ton of rice. And I was like, everybody's coming home. Nobody's leaving. We're not leaving. And we didn't leave the house for a number of months. And we just went through all that meat. And that was the best I've felt in a long time. So I'm super into game meat. But I want to know how, because when I go to the store and I see elk in the store, I know that is different from what I traded with a buddy for. I didn't actually harvest the elk. A buddy of mine did. And I traded some wild boar for the elk. And it just is different. How are you getting me wild venison?
Sure.
Which is incredible, by the way.
Yeah. Well, hey, that's such a, like, I didn't. That doesn't come up in your bio. That's badass. I didn't know that was going to be a part of this conversation, which makes it way more fun. So to answer your question, Hawaii Hawaii has some, what you're seeing in the store is a farm raised elk, probably from New Zealand. There's a few, you know, throughout North America, but they are farm raised, and legally that's the only way to do that throughout the continent. And the reason being is an elk, a pronghorn, a black buck, whatever it is, if it is a native animal, i.e. like that elk is from Montana, that animal is owned by the public, managed by the public. It's public property, right? So that's why there's such strict rules on the number of tags and all of the different things you have to do to be able to like go out and harvest that animal.
It's hard to get an elk tag too. I mean, in California, yeah. It's damn hard.
Well, they try and they gather enough data, and those wildlife biologists try and make a decision every year that says like, okay, to maintain populations, we think it's okay that the public takes this number of animals this year. And they look at like winter kill and predation, and they're constantly trying to measure, okay, how do we properly manage this animal? So fortunately, and for the most part, unfortunately, that's not the case in Hawaii. So Hawaii's largest like mammal is a bat this big.
Oh, wow.
So everything in Hawaii, especially deer, have been introduced. They are an invasive species. And as an invasive species, they're not a game, like quote unquote game animal. There's no bag limits. There's no rules, because they are in a situation where, unlike Montana, where there's some natural balance, i.e. predation and winter kill and all these different things, there's zero balance here. There's no predators. There's perfect weather year round. And then on top of that, specifically with what we do, they happen to introduce one of the only deer species in the world that can breed year round.
Right. The axis deer.
Yeah. So where in Montana and these different places, you have an animal that like has a pronounced breeding season and a fawning season or calving season, and that's what gets born for the year. Every 238 days, this population is increasing essentially like exponentially. So to directly answer your question, the regulations here, i.e. an invasive species on private property with USDA oversight, that's ultimately what took us a long time to be able to do it, is we had to bring in the USDA to like do this process. That combination of those three things allows us to be able to ship you and the family axis deer.
It's wild, man. It's really wild because there is nowhere else that you can get this. This is, I mean, the closest I can get to this is trading with a friend, or knowing somebody who harvested something and getting some meat off them, or being in the right place at the right time. That's as close as you can get. And now you can just buy it online, which is really wild. Yeah. The nutritional benefits too, for me, who, you know, I'm not anti-fat at all, but I do want to increase my omega-3s, decrease my omega-6s. A lot of what I get out of meat, because I do eat a lot of meat, is omega-6. So I have to try to get the leaner cuts of meat, which, to be honest, don't taste great. You know, I can get super lean ground beef and that tastes pretty good. But, you know, and then you got something with just way more bang for your buck with something like venison, and then that it's naturally caught too, is it's wild that this is a thing. Like I never would have imagined that this was gonna be something I would see.
Yeah, our mission was never like nutrient density. We were gonna find a way to balance populations to benefit like ecosystems, food systems. Like there's some pretty detrimental impacts to having a like fully established population here. It's pretty scary. I remember doing the first, oh, it was Peter. Oh, you've had Peter Atia on the podcast.
Yeah.
Good buddy. What an awesome guy.
Awesome guy.
And we were testing some of our bone broth, and we sent the broth in for testing to like a typical USDA FSIS lab. And then they called us and they're like, oh, these bones have been adulterated. They tested too high in protein per ounce. And we're like, what? Like, we didn't put protein powder in there. Like, we just sent you broth. And they're like, send us another one. So we sent them another one, tested the exact same way. It's got 33% more like protein per ounce than anything else, especially like directly compared to beef. And we were like, wait a second, what is going on? And I already knew kind of the same as you. Like, I was a college D1 athlete, played professional volleyball in Europe. And while I was playing at the University of Hawaii, I was able to go to a small island of Molokai and shoot deer and bring them home. And that's what I ate. And when I had enough of that stuff, I always felt better. Yeah. I always knew intuitively, like, I should be eating more of that. I shouldn't be going to the cafeteria and eating whatever was at the college cafeterias. And so when we got that data, I was like, wait a second, like, what's going on here? And that's when we went and reached out to all of our friends and said, like, okay, who does the most advanced food testing on the planet? And at that point, it was Utah State University doing this incredible, like, metabolomic testing. Like, they sent us the test results and there were 50 micronutrients that they couldn't even name yet, but they knew, like, this is something we're going to know in the future that's important. And then when they sent it back and they're like, this thing has, you know, 7x EPA, like all of these huge differences, and ultimately, like, less, like, you're getting so much more for less. We were just like, oh, wait a second. Like, this is an exciting story we now get to tell that helps us ultimately balance populations, because that's in the end, that's our mission. So yeah, it's been really exciting to see what it is. No, go ahead.
No, it's super exciting. I want to know just what your thoughts are on, if, do you think that is the access specific to the access deer, or partially also because it's wild?
Yeah. Well, and that's what metabolomic testing is showing, is it's showing you what nutrient density is, but ultimately that's nutrition of place. So it's showing you all of the good phytochemicals that they're getting from the plants and ultimately the soil, right, and how much of that is getting into the meat. So in, like, Ethan, in 5 years, me and you are going to be able to grocery store and see two strawberries sitting beside each other. And that strawberry is going to say, like, have 25 points on it. And the other one's going to be 35 points. And that's going to be like how many good things per calorie you get. Like nutrition, like, labeling and like how we measure that is going to completely change. When I saw this test, I was like, I cannot believe this is happening. But so to answer your question, it's partially all three. One, axis deer are crazy intelligent. I've seen them walk down like a 6-foot fence and jump the fence casually just to eat the same plant species on the other side of the fence. And I think it also has to do with the abundance of food here. They're not starving, they're not stressed, so they can save all of their energy for finding the very best food. So they get to go wherever they want. They get to eat the very best stuff. But then on top of that, and after we saw the testing, we dug into this, the slopes of Haleakala here on Maui have some of the world's rarest, most nutrient-dense soils in the way they absorb rain and different things. So it's typical. The soil is called an andesol, and inside those soils is another type of soil called a U-stand. So basically, Maui has some of the most fertile soils on the planet. That's why some of the best coffee comes from Hawaii and those different things. So you get this amazing combination of a highly intelligent animal that is living in one of the most, like, fertile places on the planet. And then what's really cool, if you haven't seen this part of the study, I got to show you. At the end of that study, it showed you all of the benefits of stress-free harvesting.
Right.
So what happens when that animal dies with under no stress? And it changes the level of antioxidants in your meat.
Yeah.
So it's this, I think this is a really cool combination of a really intelligent animal, a very special place, and then a system and technique we've built over a long time that helps that animal die under no stress.
Yeah, there's so many things to talk about here, because as America gets more and more obese,
yeah,
because there is such an abundance of calories, they do show that a lot of these people are obese and yet malnourished, which is counterintuitive. You think if the guy's eating enough, he's getting enough nutrients, but in fact, there will be a lot of deficits. And so, you know, logically, that just shows that the food that we're eating primarily, a lot of that food is missing those nutrients. You know, there's a reason why you can eat to the point where your stomach is taut and yet you're still hungry, or you're hungry 20 minutes later. You know, for me, I'm able to mitigate that a lot with protein. Like, as long as I get sufficient protein, I'm not hungry. But I'm also pretty darn careful about like getting enough stuff that has nutrition, and then even varying my diet when I don't feel like it. You know, I'm a guy who like can just get locked into a cycle. Like, well, now I'm interested in broccoli, I'm just going to eat broccoli. And you can't do that forever. You got to switch it up, you know, and I have to force myself to move on to another vegetable. But like, it is wild that there is. Okay, here's another question for you, because like, ideally, everybody has access to this, right? But that's not possible. It's just really not possible.
No, well, for us, it's not possible. And again, like, if our mission was low cost, high nutrient density food, I'd be looking into like regenerative agriculture and like what conservation efforts can do. Same thing, to take care of a place so that that place is healthier, so that the food is healthier, right? Regardless of what that's happening, like more nutrient dense food is a function of conservation. That can happen. Like, there's science behind that. But specifically for what we do, we're trying to balance populations. We're trying to find a place that fits for communities, hunters, ranchers, watersheds. And that ultimately means, you know, in the next year or so, we'll probably be sold out forever.
Right.
And we'll have like achieved that balance. That doesn't mean the principles and conversations that we've been able to have with our customer base and like yourself can't be expanded. Like, imagine every single person, like we said, rolling into the grocery store in a few years, will understand the true micronutrients that they're getting in their food, because they're not all going to dig. Like, they're not going to dig like me and you to figure that out. They want to be told, like, this thing is better for me than that thing. And if they have that choice and the information is true, they're going to make the right choice, even if it's a little bit more expensive, right? So I think, is there enough for everybody? You know, specifically what we do? No. Is there other invasive species that we're looking at? For sure. But there's a better food system if we all push for it. And there's a system that absolutely produces more good things per calorie in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the system, the overall industry of food, you know, it is askew in America. And we have one side where it's like, get calories as cheap as possible and feed everybody. And then there's another side where it's like, okay, now we have all these unintended consequences of overfeeding people, nutrient lacking food. Now we got to medicate them to make up for what they're missing and the excesses they're getting. And then we just kind of hop on that and go like, well, this is better than starving. Yeah. It's better than starving. Okay. Yeah. This is the game we're playing. But I think that it's fascinating to look at stuff like what you're doing and going like, well, there's a paradigm there where there's an alternative. There's a third row you could go down, which is like nutrient dense food, you know, that's not mass produced. And like when you're talking about the fact that it's harvested in the act of living its life to its fullest versus an animal, you know, I've seen the videos, which I believe they've made illegal, of factory farms. They're horrifying. You know, number one, do you really want to eat something that you know itself was unhealthy? Like the cows with ulcers that they're pumping antibiotics into their stomachs and they've got these big holes. Like, that to me is not appealing at all versus this animal that's doing what it wants to be doing.
What's so horrifying about those images is it's not just like Peter said this best. Peter said it best. He was like, you can't be healthier than your food. So that like really simple. But when I, now we have kind of a deeper understanding, you also can't be healthier than where your food lives.
Right.
So you see those images of like those stockyards and everything else and like these huge feeding operations. And I get it. Like people have to be fed, like, but that place isn't healthy. That animal isn't healthy. That animal's not going to be healthy for you. Right. So we feel really, we're so excited to like see the community we're building, like, and congrats to you too, man. You're building such a cool community around these conversations and they're really important. And so we're excited to see the community that's being built and understanding that. And even if we can't feed anybody in the end, hopefully they can be part of that catalyst for change for better food systems and expect more from food producers. But when you have this commodity market that is just a race to the bottom for the cheapest priced item, ultimately nutrient density is what's going to come at that cost, regardless of like the number of calories you get in the process, right?
So. Yeah, it is interesting because, you know, you can see stuff in like higher end grocery stores of like Belgium endive and it's fancy just because, I don't know if that's just a type of endive too. Maybe it's grown in Mexico, who knows? But I have been around stuff where it's like you're paying a little extra because it comes from somewhere else, somewhere slightly more exotic. And I never kind of thought of it in a way that like maybe the food actually has better nutrients, you know, but like that's really something to think about, because something happens in agriculture. There is a certain amount of nutrition in the soil that goes into the plant, and then it takes some effort to get it back there. It doesn't just magically reappear, you know. So if you're doing crop after crop after crop, you're going to wind up with a product that actually has less nutrients in it.
Yeah. But he showed us in that study the phytochemicals, i.e. like the chemicals that are in plants that are good for you, that then transferred to the meat in them eating them. So in like, I think in like 8 months, we're going to be able to say to somebody, oh, if you have 1 pound of our stuff, you actually get 3 heads of broccoli with it. You get the phytochemicals that come from broccoli with it.
Right.
And it's like, again, I think the cost to do this type of nutrient density testing is going down so quickly that we, in the years to come, it's going to happen. Like the problem with the system right now is somebody that goes to the length to take care of their place and produce an amazing organic apple, they can't differentiate that based on value, i.e. like how much nutrition, how many good things per calorie, based on the other apple beside it. So
they will be able to.
Yeah. And what happens when there's a guy that produces the best apples? Well, he can charge more for those apples, and his conservation practices to produce better food will be rewarded. And that is the complete opposite of a commodity system, right?
Right.
You have a system that is starting to reward like excellence and nutrient density and these individual producers, ranchers, like it's almost like an unbundling of the food system.
Yeah. I mean, that's really interesting because I got to tell you, a lot of the times when I see organic in the store, that as a label doesn't do it for me. It does it for my wife. Sure. My wife is like, we only buy organic. And then I go to the store and I'm like, which apple looks better to me? I'm going to buy that apple. You know, that's how I shop. But if it was broken down in the way you're talking about, if there were actual, like, we studied it and this apple has, this is the nutritional panel of this apple beyond carbohydrates and fiber, right? Because I think that's all you really get in an apple. I would be much more apt to buy the more nutritious apple for sure.
Yeah. It's coming, brother. And I know the guys are working on it and they are awesome.
Yeah.
Audacious is this super cool company that's working on it and a few other folks, but it's like the technology's there. It's getting cheaper. There's some large companies starting to adopt it, like Patagonia Provisions and all these, like, it's coming. And when it happens, it'll really drive, it's going to create a healthier population without a doubt, because they'll have better choices right in front of them. So that's one of the things we love about, like, I selfishly made my venison, like our venison sticks.
Yeah.
I made them for my kids, because when my kids are like headed towards the pantry, I just wanted them to have a better option than whatever they were crap they were going to grab in that pantry. And they do. Like, I leave those sticks on the counter in front of the pantry, and they're so fired up to go outside or do whatever, they just grab the first thing they see. And I have to assume, like, the vast majority of our population, like, makes nutrition choices like that. They're going to grab whatever's convenient and easy. And if that thing is nutrient dense and better for you, and it's easy enough for them to make that choice, they're going to make the choice.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people will. And I think what will happen is, as like you said, those companies will get rewarded, or those producers will get rewarded and be able to expand. And with expansion, you'll have more access. You know, I do think the access point, I just don't think everybody has access right now.
Oh, and it's such a great question, because they definitely don't, man.
Yeah. And but I do see a path towards that, you know, like a natural path too. It doesn't have to be, we don't need the government to get involved and mess it up at all, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It goes really back to, like, you're unbundling a food system that brought all of these commodity products together so that, like, small producers can start getting a premium for these items sold locally that they know are better, because nutrient density can happen locally. And all of a sudden it's worth it again to be a farmer, or be like, talk to a kid in school these days, like, no, nobody wants to be a farmer. They're like, they don't even understand how you'd make it, but B, they don't relate it to, like, taking care of a place.
Yeah.
And, I think that'll change when you can understand, like, not just the food, but the place you grow these things gets healthier with you in the process.
Yeah. Farming has changed too. I mean, it's just in my lifetime, I was talking to my kids recently about a cornfield and chasing, having a game of tag in a cornfield. And as a kid, it was like the most exciting place to play tag.
Yeah.
And they literally said to me, you can't do that. What are you talking about? And I was like, what do you mean? And they said, you can't go into a cornfield. And I was like, of course you can. I mean, yeah, you could get chased off by a farmer or something, but if you're not damaging anything. And they said, no, Dad, you can't walk into a cornfield. There's no room to walk. And I realized they're right. Corn now grows on top of each other. Like, it's so dense.
Oh, I never thought of that.
It's not planted in rows anymore. You know, when we were kids, you'd run through a cornfield.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I just saw a cornfield the other day. I hadn't even thought of that.
It's all on top of each other. Like, there's no, they were like, you can't get in. There's no access point. And I was like, wait, what? And I had to go, and I went and looked at a cornfield, and I was like, you're right. You can't walk into that. It's crazy. Wow. And that's like, you know, it's better than starving, but nobody's been starving here for a long time, right? We're not starving. So we keep making these innovations towards more instead of innovations towards better, which is what you're talking about. That innovation is super interesting to me.
Yeah. At the cost of health and at the cost of the health of a place, for sure. So like, pretty simple, like, we need to go the other way. And obviously it's easier said than done, but like I mentioned earlier, we had no plans as a function of, like, what we were trying to do here to have and be a part of those conversations. But if we kind of get to be, I'll be the first one to throw some of that stuff on our label, even just to say, like, this conversation's possible. Yeah. So we're excited to keep going down that path and keep, building community in the process, and hopefully, continue to have these really great conversations.
How did this come about for you?
Well, actually, you'll appreciate this as a hunter. So got invited to the University of Hawaii to play D1 volleyball, it's a local term called Hanai, but got adopted by a local family here, because I was currently on the east coast of Canada, so way too far to, like, go back and forth. And that local family lived on the island of Molokai, which is this small island. And that island has 7,000 people and 70,000 deer.
Molokai is an island that's mostly off limits, right?
Yes.
Not a touristy island.
It's not somewhere most tourists goes. I got really lucky to be like invited to like kind of live with a family there and ultimately met my wife there. And just an amazing place. And their relationship with deer is one of them, like a lot.
10 to 1 deer to people.
10 to 1 deer. And so when I originally got there, it was like, oh, it's amazing. This is this amazing resource. It cost me $50 to jump on the plane, hang out with the boys for the weekend, harvest a bunch of deer, fill up every cooler we could, go back, stuff the college dorm rooms, like your freezer, their freezer, everybody's freezer got stuffed with venison. Like it was the best thing ever. It was so valuable and felt amazing for the period of time we got to eat it. And I think it was my third or fourth year in UH, and I went to Molokai. I went home, and there had been a prolonged drought. And we went to go hunting, and we turned this corner to like our regular spot. And there were about 100 deer basically lying there, dying of malnutrition.
Oh, wow.
So they had essentially eaten themselves out of house and home. It's a small island, you know, it's 11 miles by 4 miles, or 40 by 11. And there was no food left because there's no ecological balance here. There's no winter, like there's no hard winters. There's no predators. There's nothing. Like the only thing that balances that population is themselves. And so I turned the corner and this like resource, this incredible resource. And that was my only relationship at that point. Like we love these animals. It's an amazing resource. I was like, wait a second. Like this can't be how this happens.
Right.
And he said, yeah, every 10 or 15 years this happens. And that's what happens. And I was like, oh, there's got to be a better way. And that was 22 years ago. And so it started this like very slow obsession, both with the animal to better understand its biology, population dynamics, like get to know the animal really well. I started a nonprofit called the Access Deer Institute, got to know like the animal really well, and then gradually formed this plan that we could incorporate wild field harvesting into the USDA system. And they had some rules, but like it took almost 7 years to put together. And finally, very, very long story short, took about 10 years, but got all the approvals to basically produce food within the like bounds of the federal government and be able to start addressing this problem. And really cool. I don't think we've ever told this story before. It just happened. We were just celebrating with our teens. In October was the first month we've ever eaten enough deer to balance populations.
Oh, wow.
So after
that's awesome.
After 10 years of building, we ate enough food and like ate enough deer in October to actually like start to balance like what is the monthly addition of like deer every single month. So it was pretty cool. So we've come it's been a long, long road. And again, so excited to be building community around it and like great food and real clear, like our staff here knows the impact they have. Like Maui stays green and healthy and vibrant versus it being a dust bowl with no forest. Right. Like there's a real, like, so it's been awesome to be able to build it and watch things grow and yeah, meet badass people like yourself.
I haven't been to Hawaii in a long time, but the last time I was on Maui, they were having a problem with the wild pigs, which were also invasive. And my favorite spot over there was Hana, and then out even past Hana, where there's like, you know, Hana I loved because there were no TVs anywhere. And then you go even further and there's no electrical grid. And it's just like dudes with solar power. Awesome. But they would like, I would take my kids out to this little like juice shack, and the people who ran it would pick everything that morning and bring it down. And to make your smoothie, you had to get on a bicycle and ride it to power the blender. Like it was awesome, but they were always going off to hunt these pigs that were, you know, messing up the forest basically. And nothing was planted in an agricultural way. It was all just wild, but the pigs were, you know, there were just too many of them, and they weren't, you know, some pirates or, you know, English people, or whoever, Portuguese, somebody brought them here as food and left them, and they got out of hand. So I remember that.
Yeah. So deer didn't come to Maui until like the 60s and 70s.
Oh,
and
wow.
Again, one of the only deer species that can breed year round. So populations are kind of increasing at 33%. And so we've got 60 to 70,000 right now on the entire island. And unless we find more people to eat them, which we're getting there, we're going to have about 210 to 220,000 deer on Maui, which would just be like, yeah, it's going to be a mess. So working really hard to achieve that mission. But for Hawaii, like it's one of the most vulnerable and isolated places on the planet. You drop anything here, like Hawaii evolved over epochs with no herbivores, nothing. So like you put anything here, like our nettles are nettleless, our mints are mintless. Like there's the plants develop no defense mechanisms. So anything here is just like, it's literally paradise, right? So they, anything that you drop here proliferates and grows. And I think we get about a introduce invasive species every 7 days now.
Yeah, it's crazy. And they're very careful about that. But I even remember there was something like somebody brought rats at one point, and then somebody else brought like ferrets or something like that.
Mongoose
to kill the rats. But one of them was nocturnal.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. And like, so now there was, yeah, it's hard, you know, and it's fragile.
Yeah. And that's part of the challenge for us in the years to come, is even at the point we are kind of sold out and trying to achieve balance with ranchers and community and hunters and everything else, there's like climate is 100% getting more like unstable. Like we get heavy rains and then drought. And like, so there's just going to be a constant balance to this, but ultimately in the end, it's also serves as such an, and you recognize this as a food hunter, it's such an important food resource.
Yeah.
It's serves as such great food security when it's like in natural balance. You know, the, unfortunately, I'm sure you know about those Maui fires and everything that happened there. And, you know, Lahaina was still burning and our teams were spooling up the same night because everybody in the community knew we were going to have to feed like 20,000 people the next day somehow. And we were able to harvest that night. We harvested 100 deer that night in 4 hours. And a day and a half later, they made something like 30,000 bowls of chili with it.
Right.
And that type of like food security when boats stop coming and like that stuff's really important. And
yeah,
just like it was like through COVID. And that only happens if ecosystems, food systems are healthy. That doesn't happen when there's like extreme imbalance.
Yeah, I think the people that are squeamish about meat, like I completely understand morally going like factory farmed meat is gross. I get it. I totally get it. I actually have no argument. I agree.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop me from eating it necessarily, but I actually agree. But when you're talking about the balance of an ecosystem, especially with an invasive species, that species will ruin the whole ecosystem and then eventually die out itself and there will be nothing.
Yeah.
Like that's the reality there.
Yeah. We feel really fortunate to, again, probably wasn't the plan, but like we get a vegan a week that writes or emails us and they're just like, I haven't eaten meat in 15 years. I found you guys, found your story. And it doesn't matter if they watched Cowspiracy 10 years ago or whatever it is, like doesn't matter if it's humane handling or ultimately why you have to eat that animal or what that animal is doing for themselves and then collectively for environment matters to people.
Yeah.
And yeah, we've
small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured or tall, whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I think we designed like the stress-free systems because we were hunters and we had a strong relationship like with the animal to start. We love the, like, we didn't start with this being an invasive species. Like you heard that story, like I probably would have starved through college because I didn't have money for the cafeteria. But we love this animal. We have a lot of respect for it. And I think it comes through in the design of like the systems we've made for harvesting and the fact that it is so nutrient dense and it is so good for this place. And it's good for community and it serves like food security and all these amazing other like, you know, benefits is just that. It's just like this great added bonus of what we're trying to do here. So,
yeah, it's really amazing. What's your favorite cut?
Oh man, this is going to be boring, but you got kids. So, you know, like ground venison.
Yeah.
Like that's how I started 20 years ago. Cause I can basically like last night we had pizza with cauliflower crust. And I basically put like a 3-inch layer of ground venison. Actually, I've been feeding our kids our 95-5 blend. So that's 5% organ. It's got 2.5 liver, 2.5 heart. And it's at low enough inclusions that they can't taste it.
Oh, I got to try that. Every time I've tried to get my kids to eat, I really like liver. Like yeah. I was raised, my mom made me liver as a kid and I've just always liked it. Liver and onions, liver and bacon. Yeah. I like it. My kids will not eat it. So I never tried kidneys or heart or anything like that, but I will try with the 95-5 because that seems like a enough of a distinction that they could get it in without really tasting it.
Especially because the organs, like the organ densities in that study were bonkers. Like 400 times the vitamin A of a beef liver. We were like, what? So what's really cool is we can include them at small enough ratios that you can't taste them, but you get a absolutely meaningful increase in like micronutrients and some of like those major vitamins and minerals, and they can't taste it. So like cauliflower crust, pizza sauce, 3 inches of meat, some cheese, and they're like that. It's chilies. It's all of those things. Cause so I've got like 14, 12 and 10. So they're like right in the middle of like bottomless pits for food.
Right.
Like they leave for school in the morning. They just grab like 6 sticks. I think they give half of them away, but my go-to is just whatever's easiest to feed those kids every day, which is a blast.
Yeah. That's amazing. Jake, this is really exciting. I'm glad there's a place that we can buy wild game. Like when I first heard about it, I was like, no, they're wrong. Somebody's lying. Yeah. It's not true. I know about this federal law because I want to buy wild game and you can't here, but this is amazing. You found the loophole, you're doing it and you're doing it in a sustainable way. And you're doing it for basically the ecosystem's sustenance.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, like, hey, thank you so much. We're always like, super stoked to have these types of conversations, but to meet people that are building similar communities, having similar conversations, people that are like trying to do something better, be better. So I think me and you will be in touch for a long time, my friend. You might have to come over here and experience it for yourself.
Yeah, I definitely want to. That would be insane. I want to see what you do, and I would, you know, if you really don't have to get a permit as an out-of-stater, because that's the hardest thing, getting a permit in a state you don't live in America, it's so hard.
You can go online and in 10 minutes, you'll have what you need to get out here and go hunting. It takes nothing.
That's wild. That is so wild. I never heard of anything like that. I've tried Oregon and I've been on lotteries and, you know.
Oh, I know. I do mule deer in Colorado every year because it that early season mule deer like forces you to go to these high elevation lakes. Half the time I don't even harvest anything. It's just so beautiful. And I just sit and wait for my tag. I'm like, oh, please, can I have a tag?
Yeah.
I can grab my bow and go out here tomorrow if I want. So yeah, it's an amazing opportunity for local hunters to feed their families. Ultimately, what they do isn't enough because the population is so virile. So there's an opportunity to both have hunting and commercial harvesting to feed people. And so it's a great balance.
It's really amazing. I'm so glad you're doing it. Jake, thank you so much.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. Thanks for the time.
And now for the Q&A.
Here's one from Anthony.
Hi, Anthony.
Anthony says, hello, Ethan and Paige. I am Anthony from Montana, originally from California, but I've been here 19 years. I've been listening to your podcast from the beginning. I even went back and listened to the first 5 that I missed. In October 2020, I was diagnosed with stomach cancer. After chemo and a complete stomach removal surgery in March of 2022, I was able to return to work 40 hours a week. And as of August, it has been a year since I returned to the gym. He says, I've been very grateful for your podcast before my diagnosis and now after the surgery. The episode about hydration helped me so much in the gym. I was not able to sweat before and now I can. So thank you. The question that I have has to do with protein. I no longer have any stomach, so I don't have any space. So I need to get as much protein as possible in small portions. My snacks are protein-based, and I even do bone broth for an extra boost. Do you have any suggestions for heavy protein in small portions so I can discuss it with my dietitian?
Amazing. Bizarrely enough, Anthony, I am working on a bone broth that has actually 25 grams of protein. You know, the most protein I've seen in a serving of bone broth, which is like a cup, is 8 grams of protein, I think was at the highest end. And I'm working on one that has 25 grams of protein. So when that's out, you can try that. Otherwise, I would just suggest whey protein or yogurt. I would think whey protein would be easiest because it's liquid and you can drink it. But they, you know, if you have any aversion at all to whey, there's casein, there's good protein made out of egg whites or eggs, there's egg protein. That, I mean, literally off the top of my head, whey is my go-to multiple times a day. I'm having whey protein multiple times a day. I find it to be a great snack. It's satiating. It gives me protein. I cannot imagine not having a stomach and what that, I just guess you got to kind of constantly eat little meals, not constantly, but like frequently eat mm-hmm. little meals. Bone broth is a great idea. And I think the only thing I can really think of is whey protein and yogurt. Greek yogurt's got a ton of protein in it.
And did I hear you say once in a recent answer to someone that you put sometimes protein powder in your yogurt?
I always put protein powder in my yogurt because 0% fat Greek yogurt does not taste great.
I see. Yeah. So you're adding some flavor to it.
I want the flavor of the protein powder, and it's great. And sometimes I will make a little slurry and mix the protein powder with a small amount of water and then turn the yogurt into like a slightly more viscous concoction than yogurt. And other times I'll just dump protein powder and mix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Anthony, I like that you said you're going to check all that with your nutritionist. That's awesome.
Yes.
How that works out. Yeah. Really good point there. And thank you so much for letting us know. Congratulations on getting through what you've gotten through, and keep us posted.
Yeah. Thank you, Anthony.
If anyone else has a question, you can always email us. It's hello@americanglutton.net.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee. You can follow us on Instagram @AmericanGluttonPodcast. Sincerely.